I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roaming Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, roamingoz.com.au.
So, Phil, what's on the show?
Well, we are in the Tamworth area.
Yes.
So, first of all, I'm going to be telling the listeners a little bit about Tamworth. First of all, the history of Tamworth, and then the most famous thing that happens in Tamworth, which is...
the Country Music Festival.
Absolutely. Then after that...
We're going to be chatting to Diane. Now, we met her at the Sunrise Cutting Horse Farm Stay, and she's a solo traveller.
Living on the road.
Yes.
Absolutely. And straight after that, I'm going to be catching up with Dino. Now, Dino owns a property called the Springwater Trout Farm.
Yes.
So he's got this great property there where you can actually camp or caravan and also do some trout fishing.
Yes, you can.
Then straight after that...
I'm going to be talking to Martina, and she's going to do a little bit of bush cooking and tell us how to start off a sourdough.
Absolutely. Sounds wonderful.
Yeah, sounds interesting.
All right. As well as a great selection of music as selected by the people we interview. So, Lynn, what do you reckon?
On with the show.
Oh, well, hello, listeners. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Tamworth, okay? Now, when you think Tamworth, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Yep. It's got to be the Country Music Festival, right? Okay, now the Country Music Festival in late January. It's the second biggest country music festival in the world after Nashville. Now, the city is recognised as the National Equine Capital of Australia because of the high number of equine events held in the city and the construction of the world-class Australian Equine and Livestock Events Centre. Now, the biggest of its kind in the Southern Hemisphere. You know, before any of that happened, though, a little bit of trivia for you about the town of Tamworth. Now, it was the first city of lights. Do you know what that means? Well, I'm going to tell you. Being the first city in Australia to use electric street lights. Now, this is going back to 1888. Okay, so on the 18th of January, it was in 1888, the Mayor William Frederick Tribe signed a contract with the English firm R.E. Crompton and Company to light the streets of Tamworth with electric lighting. The plan to be operated within 10 months. Now, on the 9th of November 1888, the new Mayoress Elizabeth Piper switched on a total of 13.5 miles, or 21.5 kilometres of electric street lighting, the first municipal electrical street lighting system to be commissioned anywhere in Australia. Oh, enough of that old stuff. Why don't we talk about, as I said right at the start of it, what Tamworth is really, really famous for, and that, of course, is the Tamworth Country Music Festival. Now, it's an annual Australian music festival. It's held for 10 days from Friday to Sunday in mid to late January. Now, each year, sometimes, if you're lucky, it'll also include the Australia Day. Now, the festival is a celebration of country music, culture and heritage, in particular, the national Australian country music scene, with numerous concerts and live performances at various venues. During the festival, the city of Tamworth comes alive with visitors from all across the country and worldwide. The festival has many times been counted among the world's top 10 music festivals. In 2017, Forbes rated it as number 8 of the world's coolest music festivals. The enormous number of visitors during the bash doubles. The city's population explodes and brings significant tourism and economic benefits to the region. Visitor numbers for the 2012 festival were estimated at 50,000 people, and it just grows and grows and grows every single year. The mass number of visitors means the accommodation throughout the area is consistently booked out for this period for up to 12 months in advance, with many visitors camping in caravans, camper vans and tents by the city's riverside and numerous other temporary camping sites throughout the region. So, listeners, whilst tens of thousands of tourists flocked to the region in January for the world's famous country music festival, there's still so many other things to see and do. Explore areas, national parks, dams and waterfalls. Go on a horse riding trek and make the most of the wide open spaces and natural beauty. Don't forget now, the Tamworth Information Centre at the Big Golden Guitar is the perfect pit stop. If you want tips on discovering this beautiful part of the country, what about take a scenic drive? That's a good idea. Take a scenic drive through the countryside to visit the historic towns including Werris Creek, Euralla and Gunnedah, where you can meet local koalas. Yes, you can indeed. Experience the country, Rodeo. Why not do that? At the Australian Equine and Livestock Event Centre, one of the finest equine venues in the world. For something tamer, meet joeys and other friendly animals at the Tamworth Marsupial Park and Adventure Playground. Now, other family attractions include Gems Fossicking and splashing about in the Lake Keppett Water Park. The area is home of the spectacular national parks. In Warrumba National Park, go bushwalking and camping by the Namoe River, which is also a great spot for fishing or canoeing. Chaffley Dam, north of Nundle, is another great spot. You can also go there. Local camping is available there, fishing and boating destination. Split Rock Dam near Barabra is a bird-watching paradise. Now, what about food and drink, listeners? From the fertile Liverpool Plains around Quirindi to the New England Highway Country vineyards near Euralla, the area is one of Australia's richest agricultural regions, boasting delicious food and wine experiences. One of the most popular is the 10-day Taste Tamworth Festival in April, showcasing the region's produce, cool climate wines and restaurants. Okay, listeners, so what about getting there and where to stay? The Tamworth region is a 5-hour drive north of Sydney and 7 hours from Brisbane. There's also a daily direct train and the journey takes just over 6 hours. Or why not fly into Tamworth Regional Airport and hire a car to explore the area? Places to stay range from camping and caravanning to heritage pubs, guest houses, motels and farm stays. Listeners, I'm going to play a track now for you. And what would be the most appropriate track for me to play? Well, we are talking about the great area of Tamworth and the Country Music Festival. So I'm going to play you a country track now.
The city lights are driving me so crazy as I walk lonely streets of old Tamworth. How I wish that I was back there in the dream time, in the country where there's always peace and quiet. Oh, I wish that I was back here. Droning in the night, where corroborees are seen by the firelight, far away from the glow of city light. Now that on Main Street, it makes me feel so lonely, for the gum trees and the taste of porcupine. I see my brothers, I see my sisters here in Tamworth, torn apart by government ways and city life. Oh, I wish that I was back in the dream time. Hear the didgeridoo droning in the night, where corroborees are seen by the firelight, where the
Oh, what a fantastic song, listeners. The Streets of Tamworth. Now, you probably thought I was going to play some Slim Dusty, didn't you? Or some Lee Kernaghan or some Johnny Williamson. But I thought, you know what? Roger Knox, we don't get to hear anywhere near enough of his songs on the radio. So I thought, I'm going to pick a Roger Knox track, okay? And that's the one, Streets of Tamworth. Now, Roger was born in 1948, okay? Now, he's an original Australian country singer, known as the Black Elvis or the Corey King of Country. Knox is from the Gamilaroi Nation, part of the Aboriginal Australian community, and was born in Moree, New South Wales. Knox grew up in the Tumala Aboriginal Mission near Bogabilla, which is near the border between New South Wales and Queensland. Now, Knox comes from a family with 11 children. His mother was a stolen child who was taken from her parents as a baby and raised in the children's home in Bomaderry. Now, Bomaderry, that's down on the south coast. Knox was not allowed to attend the high school in Goondiwindi, but instead was sent by the mission to work without pay, and I kid you not, listeners, at one of their properties. Knox has said that the first music he heard growing up was gospel music, which his grandmother, who taught Sunday school, played. Fantastic song, Streets of Tamworth, and a great singer, the Black Elvis, or the Corey King of Country, Mr. Roger Knox.
Well, hello, listeners. Welcome back. I'm Phil C, and this is Roaming Oz, and we are at the Sunrise Cutting Horse Farm, which is about 10 minutes east of Tamworth, and I'm chatting with Diane, who is a full-time traveller on the road. How are you this afternoon, Diane?
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us. I was really intrigued, firstly, by your rig. Now, you've got a transit van. Tell us a little bit about your van, how you've got it set up and so on.
Well, it's a 2012 transit.
Right. Yep.
It has a double bed at the back, uh-huh. A small kitchen unit. I have an angle fridge. I do have a port-a-loo for if I need to.
Mm-hmm.
And my son has put two solars on the top, and so I've got two batteries.
Right.
And he also put, as you can see, the long tube, black tube,
yes,
which
I saw
is
that.
Full of water. Well, right. That's my outdoor shower.
Okay.
So no matter where I am, you know, especially if I go to the beach or anything like that, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, the puppy gets too much sand, then mm-hmm. I can just, you know, put the hose onto it. And, yeah, it's usually, because it's black, it's usually
quite warm.
Fairly warm. It's
yep.
not, you know,
yes.
hot, but it's fairly warm. And
okay.
It's been a really good addition. The first year I didn't have it, and so I used to have to, you know, go into caravan parks and that more often. But now that I've got that,
mm-hmm.
I simply just put up my little change tent at the back.
Yes.
With the doors open, secure it to the sides, and I'm set.
You got a shower wherever
yeah.
you go. Now, you've been travelling full-time. How long have you been on the road?
I've been on the road on and off. I travelled for about 2 to 2.5 years full-time
right.
when I retired.
Uh-huh.
I would go back to... I originally come from Wollongong, and so I would go back to Wollongong, you know, every 3 to 4 months and catch up with my boys. But mainly I was on the road the whole time.
Okay.
And then, of course, with COVID, you know, things changed a little bit. And so I've got a base now at my brother's place, which I have a 1978 renovated 24-foot caravan
okay.
on the property.
Right.
And so that's my base.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you venture out from there.
Yeah.
So where have you actually been on some of your trips? Well, you've been on the road for 2.5 years. So where have you been? How much of Oz have you seen?
I've been to Queensland only up as far as Noosa. I find that I really don't cope with the heat.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
so Queensland's really hot for me. But I've been up to past Noosa, but up twice. And I've done the south coast up and down probably 3 or 4 times different
mm-hmm.
ways.
Yes.
Been through Victoria, did the coast a couple of times, up through the mountains. I always... always try, if I go the coast going to a certain place, then I'll go up to the mountains.
Okay.
When I'm coming back. I was in South Australia when COVID hit. So I was on the Mornington Peninsula.
Hey, so we were in South Oz.
Yeah. And I was on my way to Western Australia to start doing, like, the big loop.
Okay.
And, of course, I had to come back. I had to come back into country New South Wales.
I understand.
Which
we did
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Bit of a painful experience because we were in South Oz too, and we had to cut our trip short. Now, you are set up for free camping. You've got a fridge, you've got batteries, you've got solar panels. So do you normally stay free camping or do you prefer caravan parks? What's your sort of ratio of free to caravan parks or what do you do? Where do you mainly stay?
I mainly free camp.
Okay.
I very rarely will go into a caravan park.
Okay.
Maybe if I've once a fortnight or once every 3 weeks if I need to do some washing.
Okay.
But I normally free camp. I love being out on the road and I like all those little towns. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that I try and do is, you know, support the little towns and their communities.
Yes.
So a lot of the, like the pubs and the golf clubs and that, you can stay there overnight for free.
Okay.
And you just go in and have a meal, you know. So you're sort of supporting the community.
Exactly.
Which I think is really important.
Yes.
But I also love farm stays. So I'd probably do, you know, 5% caravan parks, another, you know, sort of 50% free camp and the rest I do farm stays. Yeah.
Now, as a woman, and you've been travelling now solo for 3 years, how do you feel on the road? Do you feel safe at some of these places? Or tell us about your experiences. When you get there, you set up, how do you decide what you're going to do and how long you're going to stay?
Yeah, I've always felt safe. I think the first couple of weeks when I was first taking off,
yeah,
it took me a little while to find my foot and you know, go, okay, I'm all right.
Okay.
But I did a lot of research beforehand, and you know, the rules, I suppose, are I always have the van parked so that I can escape if I need to.
Right.
I never set up anything until I sort of see who's coming. And if I'm not feeling 100%, you've got to go on your gut feeling about it.
Yep, yes.
Then I'll move on.
Okay.
But, you know, most of the time, you know, I think I've only ever once sort of thought, oh, no, you know, I'm going to keep going. But I never leave my awning up at night.
Okay.
I did have a double seat in the front, which I took out and put a single seat in so I can go from the back to the front without having to climb over anything.
Okay.
So, you know, having all of those. And, of course, you know, I have a GPS spot device.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because, like you said, you had a couple of boys. One of the boys has helped you set the truck up. How do they feel about you travelling alone on the road? Do they worry about you? Because you've mentioned the spot device. Now, was that something your boys encouraged you to get, or was that something you just thought, oh, I'm just going to have that just for, yeah, in case?
I guess my boys were a bit anxious in the beginning.
Right.
But the reason why I got the spot device is because my niece is a police officer and she does a lot of hiking and stuff.
Okay.
And she was the one who suggested that I get it.
So just explain to the listeners, what is a spot device for anybody that's never even heard of it? What does a spot device do?
Okay, it's a GPS tracker.
Right.
And so, you know, it goes, it's a satellite device.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't, like if I don't have phone reception, I can still depend on it being able to get through.
Right.
You can set it up. I've got it set up so that I can send a message to both of my sons, my brother and my niece.
Right.
Saying, and my message simply says, I'm awesome.
Okay.
You know, and they know then that I'm fine.
You're happy and safe.
And
yep.
I'm safe.
Yes.
It also, if there's a little, footprint, and so if I press that, it then finds my coordinates.
Yes.
And it goes through, and my boys can, they've both got the app on their phone, so they can go and they can see where I am.
Okay.
And because it sits just behind my head, I will just, as I'm driving, I will just drop little footprints every, you know, say hour to 2 hours, depending where I am.
Okay.
So that they can go on the device, on the app, anytime.
Uh-huh.
And know exactly where I am.
Okay.
And know that I'm still moving and I'm all good.
Fantastic. Now, it's not a very expensive device, is it, really?
No, I think I paid probably about $120 for it.
Okay.
And I paid $24 a month. $24 a month.
Right.
I suppose it's just like a mobile phone, isn't it?
Okay.
But it just gives everybody peace of mind.
Okay.
And if I was ever really in trouble, there's a button that goes straight through to emergency services.
Okay.
And gives them precisely where I am.
Okay. So is, I guess if for a boatie, it'd be equivalent to an EPIRB, where if you're stuck in the ocean, or if you're broken down, or if you're stranded or abandoned out in the middle of nowhere, you can actually press this device.
Yep.
It'll go to the satellite, and if they can't find you or contact you via normal communication, they will assume something's wrong here and come and look for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a great piece of equipment to have. Actually, I think I should possibly consider getting one of those myself, actually. All right. Well, Diane, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us. It's been absolutely wonderful to speak to a lady traveller by herself, because we have chatted to lots of different people. And, of course, it's always great to be able to find a female that's travelling alone and find out your experiences. So I'm gonna play you a song now for taking the time to chat with us, and it does have to be Aussie. Do you have an actual favourite Australian singer or band or something like that that you might like to have us play for you?
Well, I love Slim Dusty.
Okay.
And I've got to say, out of all the Australian songs, I love Waltzing Matilda.
Waltzing Matilda by Slim Dusty.
Yeah.
All right, Diane. Well, we're going to put that up for you straight away now. And thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. All right, listeners, now stick around for Slim Dusty's Waltzing Matilda. And straight after that, we will be back with more Roaming Oz.
Once a jolly swagman camped by a billabong under the shade of a coolabah tree. He sang as he watched and waited till his billy boiled. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. He sang as he watched and waited till his billy boiled. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Down came a jumbuck to drink at the billabong. Up jumped the swagman and grabbed him with glee. He sang as he shoved that jumbuck in his tucker bag. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. He sang as he shoved that jumbuck in his tucker bag. You'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Up rode the squatter, mounted on his thoroughbred. Up rode the troopers, 1, 2, 3. With the jolly jumbuck that you got in your tucker bag, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. With the jolly jumbuck that you got in your tucker bag, you'll come a waltzing, you scoundrel, with me. Up jumped the swagman, sprang into the billabong. You'll never never take me alive, said he. And his ghost may be heard as you pass by that billabong. You'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me. His ghost may be heard as you pass by that billabong. You'll come a-waltzing Matilda with everybody. Waltzing Matilda. As you pass by that billabong, you'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me. You'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me.
Good afternoon, listeners. This is Phil C. If you've just joined us, Roaming Oz is the name of the program where we take you on location. And we are with Dino, and he has Springwater Trout Farm. Tell us all about Springwater. Well, before you do that, Dino, how you going, my friend?
Yeah, I'm going well, thanks, mate.
That's good. That's good. Tell us a little bit about your Springwater Trout Farm. It's a fantastic place. I absolutely love it. For anybody who's not been out there and had a look at it, tell the listeners, what can they expect when they come there in relation to your farm, first of all?
Yep. So I run a trout farm in just north of Armidale, 20 minutes north of Armidale.
Mm-hmm.
So I grow my Rain Bay trout out here, and I smoke your product on farm here.
Right.
And I build a bit of a campsite, so people have been coming and having a camp and trying their luck at catching a trout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so people just come and enjoy the day and have a barbecue. And,
Now, you got some fantastic facilities there, Dino. I mean, I must admit, I wasn't expecting to see something as well set up as this. Like your campsites, for example, you just mentioned those. Completely level sites. There's no backing. There's no fussing. If you've got a big rig, just drive it straight onto a level site. Your power's there. You know, you got a little fire pit there all set up. How long have you been doing this part of it? Because I know you've had the trout farm for quite a while.
Yeah, so I had a bit of a wreck there. I've been doing the trout farm for 20-odd years,
mm-hmm.
and I built a bit of a wreck dam, and I've had a few people drop in for a bit of a fish for the day, and they're the one that suggested to put a few campsites in, a few people would like to come and camp, and I've sort of just been asking questions, like asking what they'd like, and a lot of people say if they get drive-through sites where they didn't have to back up and all that sort of stuff, so I normally just ask what they sort of want, so that's how it sort of come about to do the camping sites and have a camp kitchen and toilets and showers. And
absolutely fantastic setup. How many sites do you actually have, Dino?
So I've got 16 powered sites.
Right.
And I've got about 30 sites all up. So okay. A few other sort of 14 unpowered ones.
Okay. And these powered ones, they're all just virtually drive straight on, aren't they? There's no backing, there's no trees and posts or anything in the way. It's just...
Nah, there's nothing in the road.
Nah, they're absolutely brilliant. And apart from the fact that they're all easy to just drive straight onto and the fact that they're all level, they got some fantastic views as well. You've got the views of the dam... And your facilities are absolutely sensational. You've got showers, you've got the toilets, you've also got a nice big area where they could just sort of sit underneath that. It's all undercover if they wanted to have a bit of a happy hour down there. How long has that one been set up, that outside area?
Yeah, so it's all fairly, they're new toilets and showers and barbecue area, so it's only 2 years ago I sort of built all that.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of shade and plenty of grassy area, so it's a dog-friendly place. So if people want to bring their dogs, there's plenty of room for the dogs to run around, and if people want to go for a bit of a walk or a bit of bird watching.
Well, that's right. And, I mean, you're located on about 300 acres, aren't you? Absolutely pristine countryside. And the actual trout farm itself, that occupies about 10 acres, is that right?
Yeah, about 10 hectares all up the fish farm is, the ponds and that.
Yep. So one great thing, pet friendly, that is just such an incredible thing to have now, because a lot of travellers are travelling with pets, and this is incredible, the fact that, you know, that they can actually bring their pet out there. Yeah. That's definitely a plus. Now, you've also got a dump point, is that correct?
Yeah. So I've got a new dump point put in. So mm-hmm. it's been in for about 8 months now.
Okay. Now, what about the fishing side of it? Now, you've obviously got to pay for that, which is fair enough because you've got these great dams. So how does it work? I mean, do they need a fishing license, or because it's private, can they just wander in? How does that work?
Yeah, so the biggest thing here is you don't need a fishing license because mm-hmm. it's private property.
Yep.
And I'm a trout farm, so I don't have any closed seasons. So the fishing is 12 months a year.
Mm-hmm.
So people come and pay to have a bit of a fish, and I try to keep the dam stocked with up to 1,000 trout at all times.
Right.
And so they've got a good chance of catching a few, and it's all sort of catch and keep. So whatever they sort of catch, I clean it for them. They can cook them on the facilities at the farm, or I cryovac them and they can take them with them.
Yeah, which is a great idea. So I guess when they catch them, you clean them and you just charge them, what, the market rate for whatever trout are at the time? Or
Market rate sort of clean, so.
Which is sensational. I mean, you can't get anything better than a fresh fish straight out of the dam, and they don't even have to go to the trouble of cleaning it. All they've got to do is cook it for them, and that's it. You do all the great stuff. So what have you got in there? Are they mainly rainbows, or have you got browns, or have you got any salmon out there or anything else?
It's mainly rainbow trout. That's not the only farm you can smoke, but in the rec dam, I do have brown trout as well.
Mm-hmm.
Brown brook trout. I do have some Atlantic salmon in there, and silver salmon. And I'm going to put a few yellow belly in there this year as well. So.
Okay. Wow. So the yellow belly, they're not, just as out of curiosity, they're not going to, because yellow belly can be a bit aggressive, can't they? They're not going to beat up your trout, I hope.
No, well, sort of anything that's with a small mouth will live together. So you get your trout, your seminoids, you get your silver perch and yellow belly, all got small mouths, they'll sort of live together.
Yep.
Once you start putting cod and bass and all that sort of stuff, they'll start attacking each other.
Yeah, you wouldn't say you're not gonna put barramundi out there or anything. It'd probably
barramundi. I think you put them in, that's all you'd end up having, I reckon.
Yeah, they're gonna swallow anything that fit in their mouth. Goodness! So tell us, you've also won a number of awards, haven't you? Tell the listeners about all these awards you've won at the Sydney shows.
Yeah, so in 2016, I heard about these awards, and I entered the Sydney Royal Show.
Right.
And I was lucky enough to win a silver and a bronze that year for my first year. I was quite happy. And in 2019, I had another go, and then I was lucky enough to win the gold.
Wow.
With my product. Yeah. Okay. So
and what products were they, Dino, that you actually won the awards for?
So my smoked trout fillet.
Right.
What I won me gold for. And I won a silver. I do a pate as well.
Right.
So I won a silver for me pate.
Okay.
So there's another level. There's a grand champion. I was half a point off winning that last time. So I'm gonna go for that next year.
Okay. So if people decide they want to stay there and do a little bit of fishing and that, can they actually leave, buy some products from you, and head off again with some of your products, like some of your trout products or whatever?
Yeah. So I do have a little shop at the farm here where I sell a bit of tackle gear and I sell me smoked trout and drinks and all that sort of stuff. So if they want to come and stay a few days and have some fresh trout what they catch and some smoked trout as well, but they can take the product with them.
Fantastic. Yeah. Now you did mention you got a tackle shop. So if a person comes to you and says, "Oh, look, I'm going to stay a couple of days, but I haven't got any fishing gear." If they just want to fish, have you got hire gear or is that part of it if they haven't got any equipment?
Yeah, so that's the beauty of it. You don't have to have any gear at all. You can sort of just turn up, and I do have rods and reels and even fly rods if they want to try out a fly rod.
Right.
All that stuff on farm if they want to hire that out.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've got everything here for them.
Sounds fantastic. Absolutely sensational. So anybody that wants to have a crack at fly fishing, for example, there's a bit of an art to that. Do you fish yourself with fly rods?
I do. I've only sort of learned over the last 2 or 3 years. I used to get a bloke, Jeff Brown, who's the fly fishing rep, used to come up and put some stuff in the shop, and he sort of showed me a few sort of tips. I'm no expert at it, but I can sort of show people a bit of an idea and a gist.
Okay.
If they want to learn how to do it.
Absolutely fantastic. Fantastic. Now, what about your rates? Tell the listeners about your rates, because, I mean, I know, I've stayed there myself, and I just want to stress, listeners, this place is absolutely sensational, okay? The sites are level. Dino, you're a champion. You're very helpful with everything, but there really isn't anything that you need to do other than let the people drive on, drop the legs, pull out the awning, relax, have a beer, and look at the fantastic, pristine, you know, scenery of your place. So there's not much there to do. But what about your prices now? Just for the listeners, how much do you charge to stay overnight? Your fishing, have you got tours or anything around your property, or what else can they expect?
So I do tours as well if they book them in.
Yep.
So it's normally $15 per person. It's about an hour or so of the tour.
Right.
And once you sort of finish the tour around the farm, I'll give them a sample of my product so they can try the smoked trout or the dip to see if they like it.
Fantastic.
And, so if they want to camp in that here, so it's $25 a night for unpowered and $30 a night for power.
Yes. And is that like per couple?
Per site.
Per site. So one or two people.
Yeah, so one or two people.
Yep. That's very, very reasonable, yep.
Yeah, and the fishing's $20 for adults and $10 for kids under 16.
Okay.
So that's the fish as long as they stay here.
Okay.
And then, but you just got to buy for what you catch. So most of the fish are good sort of pan-sized ones.
Yep. Yeah. So when you say for as long as you're there, you charge $20 to fish, and if a person was there for 3 or 4 days, it's not $20 a day, it's $20 for
I get a lot of people come and just do day trips.
Yes.
Fair enough, they just pay for the day.
Yep.
But people that come and stay, if they want to stay for 2 or 3 nights here, it's just the one cup of charge.
Sensational.
Just one charge to while they fish here, but yeah, they just got to keep what they catch.
Of course.
So it's up to them how much they want to take with them. And,
Of course. Yeah. And $20, does that include gear as well, or no? Is there an addition?
There is. There's rod hire. I normally charge around $10, but that's with the bait and the lures.
Okay.
So that just covers the lures and that sort of stuff in case you lose one or something like that. But the new rods and reels, but they're more than welcome to bring their own stuff.
Of course.
So they can use whatever they like since it's catch and keep. So and use bait or lures.
Fantastic. Fantastic stuff. Oh, look, listeners, this place, Springwater Trout Farm, it's absolutely sensational, and I do urge anybody. How can they find out about you, Dino? What's the best way of contacting you for bookings?
Yeah, so the biggest thing, I've got a website.
Okay.
Dino's Smoked Trout, so they can jump on there and book a site on the website as well, but they can ring me.
Yes.
So, my phone number's 0427 750182. They can contact me on that number.
Okay. That's the best way. That's the easiest way. Otherwise, go onto the website, listeners. Okay.
Yeah. I do have Facebook as well. Facebook and Instagram.
Okay. Sensational, my friend. Look, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. And I hope that you haven't been affected too much with the COVID state of travel. Have you been affected greatly by that? Or
Yep. For sure. Yeah. So not many people out holidaying, and a lot of cafes and restaurants are shut down. But there's still a lot of little supermarkets and butcher shops still open. But like everyone was a bit affected.
Yep. Well, fingers crossed, my friend, that the situation is, there seems to be some light at the end of the tunnel, and shortly there'll be some tourists back on the road. And I hope when they're passing through your way, they take the time to come and have a look, because definitely will not be disappointed with what you have to offer.
Awesome. More than welcome. Anyone can drop in.
Thank you so much for your time, Dino. Before I wrap this up, my friend, I'd love to play a song for you. It's got to be Australian. Have you got a favourite Australian singer or band that you're really into?
Yeah, when I was growing up here, my dad always used to listen to a fair bit of Red Gum.
Okay.
And I sort of always loved Red Gum. Poor Ned is a good old song I used to like.
Poor Ned. Ned Kelly, all about Mr. Ned Kelly. Poor Ned. Very appropriate song.
Yeah.
Good on you, my friend. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dino. That's Dino, listeners, from Springwater Trout Farm. He's also got camping out there, powered caravan sites, pet-friendly, great amenities and fantastic fishing. So make sure you take the time to go out and see him. Thank you so much for your time, Dino. We're going to play that song for you right now, and we'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after Red Gum's Poor Ned.
Poor Ned, you're better off dead. At least you'll get some peace of mind. You're out on the track, they're right on your back. Boy, they're gonna hang you high.
1878 was the year I remember so well. They put my father in an early grave, slung my mother in jail. Now I don't know what's right or wrong, but they hung Christ on nails. Six kids at home and two still on the breast, they wouldn't even give a bile. We sing, poor Ned, you're better off dead. At least you'll get some peace of mind. You're right on the track, they're right on your back. Boy, they're gonna hang you high.
And I wrote a letter about Stringy Bark Creek, so they would understand that I might be a butcher ranger, but I'm not a murdering man. I didn't want to shoot Kennedy or that copper Lonigan. He alone could have saved his life by throwing down his gun. We sing, poor Ned, you're better off dead. At least you'll get some peace of mind.
It's a thousand like Ned Kelly who'll hoist the flag and stars. We sing, poor Ned, you're better off dead. At least you'll get some peace of mind. You're out on the track, they're right on your back. Boy, they're gonna hang you high. Poor Ned, you're better off dead. At least you'll get some peace of mind. You're out on the track, they're right on your back. Boy, they're gonna hang you high.
With overseas travel in lockdown, there's no better time to see what's offer in your own backyard. And if you want to do it in style, with all the bells and whistles, then 7th Street Caravans, located at 2212 Pacific Highway, Heatherbrae, is where the journey begins. Check out their range, Paramount, Silver Valley, Road Trip and Option RV. With dozens of layouts, there's something for everyone's needs. 7th Street also has a large range of pre-loved vans. They won't be beaten on price, so grab yourself a knockout deal today. Phone Aidan and the team on 4987 5288 or check out the website 7thstreetcaravans.com.au. Well, listeners, as requested by several of our listeners, we had a few messages come in about bush cooking, because you know that David and Martina are doing the big lap, and Martina is actually a five-star chef. So she's had to learn some new skills all about bush cooking, and these were requested by some people. We had Megan and Stu and Mon from Lake Macquarie who were interested in the bush cooking. And also, I know Val loves her cooking, and she's from Tasmania. So, Lynn, I think this would be a good section for you to talk to Martina.
Okay, well, that sounds like a good idea, seeing you don't do any cooking.
I don't do any cooking, so I'm just going to leave this to the two best cooks I know, which is my other half, Lenny, and Martina, who's a five-star chef. So go to it, girls.
Okay. Hi, Martina. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Oh, look, just wonderful. Thank you. Now, I hear you're having a wonderful time, and you're going to take us a little bit through cooking and sourdough and how to get that up and running.
100%. So, like, me and David, we really like sourdough. Like, we because like we are on the road at the moment.
Yes.
And you can't really buy sourdough like from any shop or anything like that.
No.
And me as a chef, I really like baking.
Yes.
So I decided to actually bake my own sourdough in a camper van.
Yep.
And in camper van, like cooking in camper van could be like really tricky because the heat in a, you don't actually know like what's the heat inside of the camper van.
No,
but you have to like work around that. And as well, like if you're using a firewood like for your camper van, like it can be all different kind of firewood because the firewood burns not all the firewood burn the same. Like
I didn't know that. That's quite fascinating.
Yeah. It's actually fascinating because, like, we learned from some bushman. He was talking about the highest heat-resistant tree, like, in Australia, which is a digi tree. I don't know if you heard about that.
No.
And this tree actually, this firewood will, like, burn very slow, but it has like, very high heat temperature, which I didn't know before, and... It's actually really cool.
So this tree is what, more in northern Australia, or is it all over Australia?
I think it's starting from northern New South Wales and going, like more to northern Australia.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. So I can actually take you through the process if you want me to.
Yep, no. So I did do a little bit of a look-see, and apparently you need like a living culture to get your... sourdough started, is that correct?
Yeah, that's very correct. Because you have to use your sourdough starter. It's not the same one like what you buy in a shop, like a dry yeast.
Yep.
And I keep my sourdough starter in the fridge. It's basically fermented dough.
Yep.
So we do have to keep refeeding it when you need it.
So how do you go on the road? Because, sorry to keep asking these questions because I'm quite curious. Because you've only got like a small fridge that you carry with you. And you've got to keep this culture feeding it all the time. So that obviously takes up room for what, a can of beer or something?
Yeah, it takes a room, but not so much because you keep it like in a small jar.
Yep.
And it's just basically maybe 2 big spoons of the sourdough starter like in a jar. So it's like not so much. So it's not too bad. I like to keep it in the fridge.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's in your starter? If you want to take us through that.
In my starter is only rice flour and some water, and that's it.
Oh, okay.
And basically, like, everything around you, there is a bacteria. And what this bacteria does to water and your rice flour, it's going to ferment your rice flour and water, which makes the sourdough starter.
Right.
And it's a living culture. And many people actually give this living culture or your sourdough starter name.
Frankie!
Ours is called Frankie. You can hear David yelling. But, so ours is called Frank, and he's actually 2 years old now.
Yep.
So, he has developed now, like, all these, like, good flavors and, this sourdough flavor to it. So, So it's really good. And so once I actually need my sourdough starter, I have to take it out from the fridge and I have to refeed it. I just put like 2 spoons of rice flour into it and a little bit of water.
Yep.
You make some kind of like a pancake dough, like a bit thicker than pancake dough, like in your jar.
Yep.
And you leave it outside to rise. So what's happening with your sourdough starter, like once you take it from the fridge, it's like on the bottom, like you don't see any bubbles, like nothing happening, it's basically sleeping, like it was sleeping in the fridge for a while. And then when you put a flour into it, it's gonna start to like activate and gonna rise and it's probably gonna double its size.
Right, okay.
And you're gonna see all these bubbles and everything, so you'll see like how it's alive.
Oh,
and
okay.
Yeah, and then what's going to happen after that? So when you see it's going to rise, it will have a peak time. And when it has a peak time, it's going to collapse again.
Mm-hmm.
And what you want to do, you want to take the 1 spoon of the sourdough starter in its peak time because you know that the sourdough starter has the power of the sourdough starter is strongest at that point. And you know that your yeast is powerful.
Right.
So you can take... you can take that one spoon and it's ready basically for your bread.
Right, okay.
So this is your process with the sourdough starter. And so once you have this, so what I do actually, because it's really hard on the road because you're all the time traveling and moving and you need to do your time management well with your bread because it's not like it's your home and, you know, you can do it whenever. So what I actually do, like I take my sourdough starter in the morning, I refeed it.
Yes.
And then we are on the road or we do whatever.
Yep.
And I'm checking my sourdough starter, which I have it like in a passenger side and I'm just checking it like, okay, it's rising. Then it's peak time. Okay, fine. I can use it. Then I take my baker's flour. So what I actually use for my bread is the baker's flour.
Right, yep.
Which has like high protein content, which is good for gluten development in a bread.
Yeah.
And but I must tell you, like sometimes you can't get baker's flour like in the shop because like you get to remote places where there are only flour you can get is a plain flour.
Yes.
And I actually use plain flour and it worked well as well. Like the bread wasn't that fluffy enough like you get from the like baker's flour, but it was still fine and the like the flavor of the bread was amazing still.
Oh.
So it worked with the plain flour as well, but the best flour for your bread is the baker's flour.
Okay, right. Yep.
Yeah. So then after, so as I was saying, so I'm going to take my baker's flour. I'm going to take what I normally do because I don't have a scale here, so I have to do everything by eye. I'll take 1 cup and a half of the baker's flour in my bowl.
Yep.
And I'm going to put almost 3/4 of the cup of water into my bowl with the flour. I'm going to mix it and I leave it like for like maybe like 40 minutes just to start the process of fermentation because I want to wake up my flour and I want to have these cultures like already building inside of dough. And after these 40 minutes, I'm going to put 1 spoon of my sourdough starter, like in peak time.
Yep.
I'm going to put it in my dough and I'm going to put like 1 spoon of salt. And I'm going to put all these ingredients together and I'm going to mix it well, like probably for maybe 2 minutes.
Yep.
Just I want to develop the gluten. Like in a dough. And once I have this, what I'm going to do after, I'm going to do the stretch and folding method, which is basically, which is very important actually for your bread if you want to develop that nice texture and nice bubbles inside of your bread. So what you're going to do, you just every 20 minutes, I'm going to like take the like my dough and I'm just going to stretch it and I'm going to fold it. And I'm going to take, again, like the other end, and I'm going to stretch it, and I'm going to fold it. And I just do this, like, maybe 3 times, and that's it. And I'm going to do this for every 20 minutes for 2 hours.
Oh, wow. You got to really and plan then, ahead for this, don't you?
Yeah. But, you know, sometimes it's really hard to do this folding method. So if you're going to do it probably, like, 2 times between these 2 hours, it's fine. But if you want to, you know, have, like, really – like you want to have perfect bread, you're going to do it more times.
Right.
Like, you know, we're on a road, so it's really hard.
Yes.
So if you go, yeah. So after this folding method, I'm going to just wait. I'm going to rest my dough for maybe 3 to 5 hours. It depends like what the temperature is outside. Like if there is like 35 degrees outside, you're going to leave your dough to rise just for maybe 3 hours because, you know, it's just going very fast.
Yep.
Or, but if it's like really cold outside, it's probably like 20 degrees or something, like you leave your dough to rest for 5 hours. Like once you have your bread skills, you know what you're doing, you know what the bread is doing, you actually you learn like what to do.
Right. Okay. Yep.
And yeah, so then your bread, like it's all done, like it's reasoned very well. And what you're going to do, you start your fire. So you collect your firewood, you start your fire and you wait for like 40 minutes or so to have your nice charcoal.
Yes, that,
charcoal ready.
Yep.
And what you take your kempoven, you heat your kempoven, you put it in a fire just for 5 minutes just to have like temple that's ready for your bread.
Yes.
To get yourself like nice crust. And and then after you take your charcoal, you make a bed of charcoal and you put your camp oven on the top.
Yep.
And then what you're gonna do, you take your bread from your bowl, you put it on the table and you knead it to a nice shape, like to a nice round shape.
Yep.
And then you're just gonna take your sharpest knife you have and you try to score the bread.
Right,
if you can't score your bread, that's fine. But what's actually happening when you're scoring the bread, the air from inside of the bread, because you know, like all the yeast and everything that is working inside the bread, it's like all the air is gonna come out.
Right.
And yes, it's actually kind of important. But if you can't do it, it's fine. Like your bread is gonna just taste the same.
Mm-hmm.
Then you just take this bread and you put it inside of the camp oven. Mm-hmm. You put the lid on the top and then you put charcoal on the top.
Yes.
You want to put more charcoal on the top than on the bottom because what actually happened to me, I'm a master my baking just recently because we put like so much charcoal on the bottom and the bread was burned from the bottom.
Right, yes, that's too much heat.
Yeah, it was too much heat, so we have to, like, figure it out, like, how much charcoal we're going to put on the bottom, like, how much charcoal we're going to put on the top. And, I think it's, like, maybe 70% of the charcoal on the top and 30% on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your actually the best way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But also, because you don't know what's happening in a camp oven, you have to, I had to check, like, my bread, like, every probably 10 minutes if it's burning or if it's, like, nothing happening inside.
Yep.
Like, you have to keep checking your bread because you don't want your whole day work to be ruined.
No.
So it's a little bit tricky, but once you get, like, this bread skill and that camp oven skill and you know like what firewood you're getting and which firewood is good, which firewood burns fast, not fast. So once you get it, like I mastered my bread like very well now and
Oh wow, that is a lot of work. Now one question, do you have to grease the pan or anything, put some oil in it, or do you just put the bread straight in?
Yeah, actually, so before I tried to actually grease my camp oven, but now what I'm doing, I just put a baking paper on the bottom.
Ah, yes. Good idea.
Yeah, I put like two layers of baking paper, and I think that works the best. Because you don't burn your bread from the bottom.
No.
As well. So what I actually learned, like when you spray your camp oven, when you put your bread in it, it's actually frying the bread from the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah, so it works like, you know, you're frying your bread on a pan.
Yep.
So you don't really like want to fry your bread. Or,
no.
Like it's not a bad thing, but I think like now because I'm really like particular and I'm mastering my bread, so I'm trying to do it without it. And I just put the baking paper and it works fine.
Well, I think I'm going to have to give this a go. The next time we go camping, but I don't know how I'm going to go. I don't know how I'm going to go having this culture, you know, going on the whole time. That's the hardest part, I think. Keeping to feed it and remembering to do that every day. Like that's another chore that you've got to, you know, do each day apart from like cleaning up and everything. So, yeah.
But the thing is, you don't have to refeed it every day. I just refeed it once I need it.
Yep.
I think because my sourdough starter like is really strong now because it's 2 years old and it has all this culture in it. So I actually wasn't baking like for a month, I think.
Yeah.
And I thought like my sourdough starter is dead.
Yes.
But then I took it out from the fridge and I refeed it really well, like double amount what I would normally do, and it worked well.
Oh, okay.
So like 1 month in the fridge, fine.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, that is so fascinating, Martina. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
I'm sure the listeners are going to definitely want to go out there and try that, Lynn. I know we will.
We will the next time we're on the road.
And most definitely. Look, I'll get the fire going and you get the dough kneaded.
I can 100%, I can write a recipe as well for you guys. So
Oh, that'd be great.
On your website.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be great.
That'd be fabulous.
When you get time with all your travels.
I'll find time for it.
You'll find time. Now, I think we'll play a song for you after all that. So have you got a song you've selected?
Yeah, actually, I have a song by Slim Dusty called The Drover's Cook.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Very appropriate song, The Drover's Cook. You're becoming quite the driver now, Martina, you and David. Yeah. And you are certainly the cook.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for that.
That's all right. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Martina.
All right, Martina. There you go, listeners. That is Martina. She's the other half of the couple that are travelling this great country of ours, and she's just giving us a recipe there for sourdough. Now, if there is any recipes, just let us know, listeners, and we will try and get Martina to come up with a recipe for you out in the bush, okay? So we'll be back with more Roaming Oz. Thank you so much, Martina, for your time.
It's all right.
Fantastic. Now, we're going to be back with more Roaming Oz straight after Slim Dusty's The Drover's Cook.
Now, the drover's cook weighed 15 stone and he had one bloodshot eye. He had no laces in his boots and no buttons on his fly. His pants hung loosely round his hips, hitched by a piece of wire. And they concertinaed round his boots in a way that you'd admire. Well, he stuck the billy on to boil and then emptied out his pipe. And with his greasy shirt sleeve, he gave his nose a wipe. And with pipe in mouth, he mixed a sod and a drip hung from his chin. And as he mixed the damper up, the drip kept dripping in. I walked quietly over to him and said, "Toss that mixture out. And in future, when you're working, keep your pipe out of your mouth." Oh, he stood erect and eyed me with such a dirty look, and said in choice Australian, "Get another bloody cook." "A cook," I said, "you call yourself, you greasy slop-made lout? Why, you should be jailed for taking work that you cannot carry out." Oh, he then uncorked some language, and I felt a thrill of fear, as he swung his hairy paws about and said, "Trot your frame out here." In outback brawls there are no rules nor limits to the weight, so I had to squib or meet him with my meagre 9 stone 8. And we both bounced into action and fell into a clinch. I put a headlock on him, but I couldn't make him flinch. For hours we fought in deathly grips, swung upper cuts and crosses. We staggered and floundered in distress like broken winded horses. Then gaspingly he muttered, "Oh, I fought all through the north. You're the gamest thing I've ever struck. Here, give me a hand, old sport." Well, I can't explain my feelings. With joy, I nearly cried as we staggered to a shade close by where he sank down and died. Now, you talk about that saltbush scrap. Why, it was only play compared to that grueling battle we fought that fatal day. And now above his resting place where the grass has grown to seed, on stone is carved this epitaph for travellers to read. "Here lies the son of Donald Gunn, none gamer ever stood, and he died in Dinkum battle with Jimmy Underwood."
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or RomanOz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.